Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Episode 2 of Season 3 of The Umbrella Academy, the world's biggest bowl of twine, may be over, but we're just getting started here on post-show recaps. I'm Marissa Garza, and with me on this road trip through time is Mary Kwiatkowski. Mary, thank you so much for joining me. I just needed some emotional support to get through this podcast.
Oh my gosh. I love this. Love a road trip. Yeah. Love the world's biggest ball of twine. Have you ever been to a like world's biggest or world's largest roadside attraction?
I have stopped by the world's largest vending machine.
Oh,
which was close to my college in Illinois. And I love stopping at random places on road trips, but the vending machine really, really takes it away.
You know, I asked that question and then I was like, I don't think I've ever been to like one of those worlds, but I don't even know if I've ever seen them. I feel like this is like a Midwest or.
Oh, definitely.
Like north, middle.
Just like flat land. Anytime there's flat land, there's going to be a something to see. Like, I think in South Dakota, there's this place called Waldrug that was just.
No, wait, I've been to Waldrug. Okay. Yes. Because Waldrug, it's like not only do you go there, but for like 200 miles to Waldrug, it's like 200 miles to Waldrug, 199 miles to Waldrug. I have been there. And then you get there and you're like, what is this? There and the, something Corn Palace. There.
Oh, yeah, the Corn Palace. Yeah,
is that also near Waldrug? Yeah. Okay.
It's like in Nebraska, I think, instead. But yes. There.
The Corn Palace.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, a lot of stuff like that.
But that's what road trips are for. You know, I think, you know, in this episode, I'm totally on team five, really wanted to see the biggest ball of twine. And I'm totally all about it. Got to make the stops. Speaking of making the stops, if you'd like to stop at any of the following podcast feeds, this is where you can find us and our Umbrella Academy coverage. We have our own feed. So if you just want to focus on Umbrella Academy coverage, you can find us at postshowrecaps.com/umbrella-academy-feed. Or you can find us at postshowrecaps/super or postshowrecaps/binge. Much like the show, there are many timelines. There are many podcast feeds. Choose the one you want. Basically. Yes,
and every podcast that gets dropped in each one of those feeds will be slightly different, but you have to listen to all three of them to figure it out. That's not true.
So many variations.
Download them in all places, but you'll need to listen to one.
Yes. Solid advice there. And we are here recapping season three all the way through the end of July. I think there'll be two episodes a week till the end of July, and then we'll have a feedback show at the very end of the month. In the meantime, if you'd like to talk to us about the show, you can send feedback and questions directly to us on Twitter. I'm at MarsBars, MarzBars, and Mary's over at Frail Mary. Or you can catch us in the post-show recaps Discord or email super@postshowrecaps.com. So I think that's the map of all of the places we can go and how you can reach us. But one more piece of housekeeping before we dive in. I do just want to mention that these episodes will be spoiler-filled recaps, meaning that we'll be talking about each episode from the perspectives of people, being the both of us, who have watched the series in its entirety thus far being June of 2022. So if you're listening to this in the future, we have not seen what you have seen. But if you do not want to be spoiled, go ahead and finish the season and come back and join us for these deep dives into these episodes. So, Mary, episode 2. Any big thoughts before we dive in?
This was the episode that really kicked off my season-wide love of Diego, which was, I'll admit, up through the first two seasons, Diego was like my least favorite or second to least favorite family member.
Mm-hmm.
like, I think Luther might still be my least favorite. Just, it's just boring. I'm sorry.
He is totally boring. Yeah. But I was all like, you like, this is adorable. It was like nice to have like adorable, like himbo-ness happening. Like I said, I think I said this in the total binge cast. Like, it's very Thor-like. It was nice to get like a Thor-like character in this season.
Yeah, but in the first two seasons, I thought that Diego was kind of a jerk. Mm. And I don't know, sort of different. In season two, it was a lot of like Diego stupid jokes. I'm like, is he? I don't know. But this season, I'm all on board with everything that happened. And if you heard our episode one coverage, because here's a fun fact. We did episode one right after we watched the first episode. Then we watched the entire season and now we're doing episode two. My opinion completely changed. In episode one, I was like, I'm going to hate this plot line. I hate Stan. I hate Diego in this. This is horrible. No, I loved it. I ate it up. It was great.
Yeah, so, it was really kind of fun to see Diego like just like let go of himself a little bit and like kind of just embrace the present, which I guess you have to do when you face the end of the world multiple times. But yeah, I agree with you. Seeing Diego in this episode was really fun.
Diego was fun. And then five, this is the time when I think he's most embraced his like, I'm an old man, retiree vibe. Like the way that he dressed the whole episode. I love it.
It's very like curmudgeon-y. He's like, I'm retired. I have my khaki jacket and my hat and I don't have time for you and your shenanigans.
It's just so funny. I think it's just very good. We only saw him in like the little schoolboy uniform for the first two seasons. So this is so fun just to see a different side of five. There'll be a lot to talk about. But overall, I liked this episode a lot going into it. I liked it when we watched it. And I think that it really sets up a lot of the future direction for the rest of the season.
Yeah, I really, you know, I like you mentioned, we watched everything after the first episode, but this is like where we're really getting our feet under us for the entire season, and we can really kind of see where we're going to go. And I really liked how it kind of all came together in this one. So, without further ado, let us dive in to episode two. So we finally get the answer like you had predicted, I think, in one of our previous podcasts, Mary, with your clairvoyance and your future sight. We got the answer to what is going on with Claire, or if there is a Claire, pretty much at the beginning. But I have to say, it was not my favorite Allison motivated action she's ever taken, because she basically breaks into this house that is hers from another timeline, but like breaks in, goes upstairs, sits on a child's bed and says, hey, mommy's home. And it's not like it's Claire, but it's not Claire. It's the unclear of everything. I just thought this was very scary. What were your thoughts?
Yeah, there's a lot of questions. Like, so the house was exactly the same in this alternate timeline where Patrick marries someone else and has a different child, but happens to have a child that's almost exactly the same age. Their room is presumably very similar. Like, almost everything else is the same. I feel like if there's no Allison, there's probably a different house or more changes. I mean, I was kind of confused by the fact that she called the same phone number to talk to, to leave the message in the first episode. And then in this one, I guess, did she like buzz into the house? I can't remember how she got in, but
I think there's like a key under the door.
Okay. Same spot. Like I feel like there were too many things similar where I feel like it should have been even more different than it was. But bottom line, you should have seen this coming. I think you were just kind of deluding yourself into thinking that somehow the world was going to exist this way. But yeah, Claire is no Claire. No Claire, obviously.
No Claire. Yeah. And this scares Allison. You can see that she gets like super scared. She's like, something is wrong. Something is very wrong. But at the end of the day, she hops back in a car and joins the rest of the family after her visit to California. I don't know how she got on a plane right away or how she got there. I don't really know, but she gets the answer to her question.
And this is a question that someone brought up in the patron Discord, which was, how do they all of a sudden have money? Like in the first episode, they needed to exchange Luther's watch in order to pay for the hotel rooms. I'm just going to have to tell myself, like, to make it make sense, they found some money.
She rumored it. She rumored her way.
Yeah, I guess with Allison, maybe she rumored it. Maybe Allison rumored her way into a bunch of money that the rest of the squad's using. I don't know. That but somehow they have money now. Like they're that in a magical hotel. They probably have money somehow. They're constantly eating.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Yeah, but definitely some logistical questions happening off the top.
Just don't think about it too hard.
Back at the hotel, Vanya is like looking through an encyclopedia and she finds out that she, along with her siblings, are now known as the Kennedy Six and are like wanted for the assassination of Kennedy, I think is what we're to presume from that. And she also, which I thought was interesting, like Sissy is also in this encyclopedia. And she had died on October 1st, 1989 in Oakland, California under a false name. But I'm like, why? How did Sissy become part of the – like, how did the encyclopedia know about Sissy was my big question there.
Right. It seemed a little convenient that that was going to be in there, like that this was so important. My guess is that the connection is the fact that – I'm assuming if at the point when they decide that Vanya is part of the Kennedy Six, it's like, okay, we know that she convicted of potentially killing Sissy's husband and that she was like a nanny on their farm. So like, I feel like that would be the kind of thing that would be a connection. Obviously this is a really horrible way for Vanya to find out about Sissy's death. It's also on the day that she's born as well, which is like a little bit,
And I think it clicks. It doesn't click with her, but later in the episode, it clicks with Klaus a little bit more when he finds out that his mom has also died on said day. But like, she just kind of she sees Sissy and rips the page out of the encyclopedia and is just really thinking about Sissy's impact on her life, I think, at this point, because we get a lot of flashbacks in terms of their life together.
Do you think that this is something that sort of we have clarity on having watched the whole season? Do you feel like there's something to do with Sissy sort of magically dying because it would be too weird in the timeline for her to exist in the same time as a future version of Vanya?
Oh,
you know, is it kind of like, oh, if Vanya's supposed to be born on this day, well, you can't also exist because you met Vanya in the past. And how would that make sense? Like, I don't know. I'm just wondering if it seems too convenient for it not to be somehow sort of magically related to all this, right?
Yeah. Like,
otherwise, they would have just had her die on a different day.
Yeah. No, I think there's something to that, especially from the aspect of the show not wanting have to like explain so much in the time paradox department of like, okay, so if Sissy was alive, then like basically was that like how old, what is the difference, the age difference between Sissy and Vanya at like in present time? How do we deal with that? Like it creates a lot of plot situations as well.
Yeah. It gets a little complicated when you think about it. This is why time travel is complicated and why I feel like the show kind of took the tact of like, we're just going to make it so absurd that like, just don't even think about it because like, yeah, when time stuff happens, everything's going to pieces. It doesn't matter. And then also the whole Kennedy Six thing, we kind of got a little bit of this in season two when they do like a montage on a news station of like this guy Diego Hargreaves who was in this thing, and then also it seems at the time it like that none of these people are connected, especially like Allison who is like a, you know, working with the sit-ins and where it's like how is Allison connected just because she was spotted at one time with one of them? Like they kind of like lump everybody together like, oh yep, Kennedy Six. It's like, wait a second. Are they though? And they're like, oh, and they kidnapped some young boy who's five, like, is the one running everything.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, so that was pretty funny. But I did try to freeze frame on like all of the pictures in the encyclopedia of each person and the caption. Some of them were interesting. Some weren't that much. The main one I wanted to know was like, did they give the name five next to five? And that one was blurry and you couldn't see it. So I don't know. I think they decided it would be too hard to come up with whatever.
Or he like blipped. Like,
yeah.
Couldn't handle it. Well, interesting. Yeah, I didn't way to be dedicated there. I could not. I was too busy typing.
That's one of my favorite things to do while watching shows is like pausing it on like any kind of written text and reading it just to see if it makes sense or like what it is. Because sometimes they're really funny. Like if they have a flyer or something, it's really funny whatever it says.
Yeah, sometimes there's Easter eggs in them and everything.
Just for a person who wants to do like a third rewatch and, and do that.
Well, in this remembering of a Sissy, we do get some flashbacks, and this is really like getting Vanya to think about like the impact of Sissy on their life and the fact that, you know, Sissy saw Vanya as like a blessing in her life, but also like what did Sissy bring to Vanya's life? And there's a quote that Sissy says as Vanya is looking at a barbershop that says, "You don't even notice the box you're in until someone comes along and lets you out." And this is what kind of sparks the transition from Vanya to Victor.
Yeah. And so there's, it's been talked about a bit. I don't know if you read any of the articles or anything, but there were a lot of conversations on Twitter about how the show handled the transition of Elliot Page as well. We talked about in our binge about how Elliot, along with some of the writers, like really worked together to have this scene and some subsequent scenes, like really what they felt was not just what would work well with the character, but would also be like a good representation for the public who's going to be watching the show, right?
Yeah, it was like an educational moment as well as a storyline.
Exactly. And the scene is integrated into a scene where you have a lot of the I guess everybody's together except for Allison. Is anyone else and Luther? Luther's not there, so it's
right.
Five, Diego, Klaus. I feel like I'm missing someone. Maybe it's just them. Five, Diego, and Klaus are hanging out, and then Victor, and they all have new looks. Five, yes, like you mentioned,
thank goodness.
Five is just wearing old man clothes. And Klaus cut the hair a little bit, cut the beard a little bit. And then Diego, thankfully, goes back to like original Diego look a little bit more. It's not the long. I know. Look, you know what? If you like the Diego with long hair, go back and rewatch season two. That's where that can exist.
I much, much improved Diego here, I think.
Yes. And yeah, so they're all like, oh, nice haircut. And Vanya at the time says, yeah, that's all, not all that's changed. It's Victor now. And everyone's kind of quiet for a second. And they say, do you have a problem with that? And I think Diego's the first to answer and just says, ah, no, it's chill, whatever.
Yeah.
Cool. And they include a little bit of comedy into the scene as well with Victor initially walking up and explaining how they had in the previous episode had a one-on-one talk with Marcus, and Five is like, yeah, super cool that you're Victor, but also, hey, not cool about that thing you did with Marcus. So it's like a little bit comedy of like, oh yeah, that's really nice. Like,
I'm so happy for you, but also don't ever do this again.
But also that does not change anything about your actions. Yeah. I just thought that was kind of funny.
Well, and what I really appreciated about the scene, and I think, you know, we're seeing across media in general when it comes to storylines for LGBTQIA characters, is that, like, not everything has to be rooted in trauma. Like, a coming out doesn't have to be a big event that has to explain some big thing. It's just, like, there. And, like, Victor walks into the scene and doesn't say, like, hey, everyone, look at my hair. And hey, everybody, my name's Victor now. It's just like they walk into the scene and it's like, hey, I met with Marcus and everyone. And that's what causes everyone to like look at them and like start the conversation. It's not like a big to do. It's just a very natural conversation. Right, you know, and I really, really appreciate like how that was shown as a way for people to have these conversations in their own lives.
Yeah. I mean, it's really emphasizing the like be held to your actions, not to your looks or your, you know, identification or whatever. And obviously plenty of people probably in different moments in their life do need more of a conversation or want emotional whatever. But in this specific example, I think Elliot Page was really like, what makes sense for this character and what fits well with this scene is for everyone to, I mean, this is like a family of superheroes. They've been through a lot. They've been through time travel. Like this would be the thing that would, for some reason, put them on edge. No, not at all.
And we hear from Luther later on, like, it's a family that also just goes its own way and has had like a lot of, you know, the death of Ben being the big shared collective trauma that kind of splits this family into their own individual paths. So I think everyone kind of just accepts that this is just another step on Victor's path and it's not, you know, anything more than that.
Yeah. And it's a nice scene. Do you want to talk about the other sort of big moment that happens in this?
Yeah. During the scene, everyone's talking, we get some funny conversation between Klaus and Diego. Cause Diego's like, this is my alleged spawn. Like he's still kind of questioning, the fact that Lila just like dropped off Stan and is, you know, around. So he's trying to deal with that.
And just like to piggyback off of what you're just talking about.
Yeah.
Much in the same way that they're all just like chill with anything that's happening in their lives. Like this show, it deals with family drama and family trauma. But there's no moment when everyone is like, in the very first episode of the first season, Five comes back from the future and they're sitting there and they're like, well, that's kind of weird that Five came back. And then they all go their separate ways and do whatever. In this scene, Diego's like, yeah, I got a kid. And they're all like, oh, that's interesting. So when Victor shows up, he's like, yeah, I'm Victor. Like, that checks out. Like, that's their attitude towards everything. So I think Elliot Page was really right in being like, this is how they would react. Look at how they've reacted to everything else that's happened.
Yeah, I mean, they had a robot mom. There's not really much that can really phases them. Yeah. Also, in the scene, so Victor's explaining how they met up with Marcus and they're going to meet up with Marcus again to try and get the briefcase. And this is like, this is how we're going to solve the situation. That is not how they're going to solve the situation, obviously, because it's only episode 2. But also at this time, you know, Five in his buffet, I don't know, ecstasy of eating all of this food, looks at the tank and that used to have three lobsters in it and notices that the lobsters are gone. So he's starting to pick up on the fact that even though this is a great timeline and I love retirement and I don't want to go anywhere and I don't want to do anything, something is up. And we know that this is the result of one of the pulses from the Kugelblitz. Like it came and it took the dog in the last episode and it took the lobsters as well.
Do you have any hypotheses for why, like, is it just not strong enough to take bigger creature? Like, does it have to work its way up? I don't know.
Yeah, I definitely think as we see throughout the series, like, it starts off very small as, like, granted, it takes Marcus. Like, Marcus is not a dog,
but Marcus was touching it.
And it touched it, right? Like, he touched it. But, like, the pulses start, like, just in the house and then they go outside. Like, they keep getting bigger and wider and the Kugelblitz ends up growing. So I think it needs matter to build strength and to build energy from that. I don't think it has anything to do with Grace's worshiping of it.
Okay. You never know.
I think it has to do with like, oh, I had this, basically, like, I ate this food today, so I have this much strength to go out and expand and come back.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think it's funny how Five is, like, even though you said they're really wanting to go into this retirement state, they're still, like, the only one observant enough to realize that the lobster isn't the tank anymore.
Turn that part of his brain off, right? Like, he's like, oh, that's weird. Okay. So continuing on with, just how the show kind of handled Victor's transition. I do want to point out another scene that we get later on with a walk between Victor and Allison. And this is just another, again, this I think is true to the characters, but is also here for us as an audience to really know how to have a conversation with someone who has gone through a transition. So Allison is asking, you know, like, I never realized. And Victor's like, how could you? I didn't even know like what was going on. And it was being with Sissy that opened this up. And it was just, to me, really beautiful. One of the most beautiful parts of the conversation was when Victor says, I always hated mirrors. I thought everyone felt strange in their own skin. I guess that's not right. Right. And Allison asks Victor to like, look at their reflection in the glass. And it's like, what do you see now as me? And like, that's the whole point, right? Like that is what transitioning can do for people, is help them see themselves as themselves. And so I think it was really, really well done. And especially at the end of the conversation, when Allison says, thank you for trusting me with this.
Yeah. And I think this is a good, in contrast to everything we said about the previous scene, it shows, like you said, that you don't need these conversations, especially in the media, to be always about trauma or whatever. And they can sometimes be sweet conversations. They can sometimes be very just sort of, okay, yeah, cool, we're on board. Or they can be a bit more emotional, like this one is. And that sometimes those conversations don't need to be the same for each person, right?
Right.
Like I think this is really important here to show that whether or not they're sisters or brother and sister, Allison and Victor are a much closer emotional pair than Victor has with any of the other siblings, especially up to this point. Like the first season especially was so much about Allison and Vanya and their relationship and their trust and like desire to become closer siblings. And so it makes sense that Victor then would have the more emotional conversation with Allison.
Yeah. And I think it also shows, Liz, like as an audience, of course, it's okay to have questions if there's someone in your life that is also going through a transition. Like it's okay. And that's like how to have these conversations. And as you just talked about, those two characters being so close gave us a perfect opportunity to have this type of conversation.
Now, love this conversation. One of the last times I'm going to really appreciate Allison in this season.
Yeah, I know. Especially like she closes it off with like, Victor, we're family. There's nothing you can do to make me love you less. And then I rewatched the episode this morning and then I was like, except for that one thing that you did later, which is like completely whole, you know, like Allison or Victor lying to Allison about what Harlan did to their mothers is like the big thing. But this is like pure foreshadow on the first watch, pure foreshadowing in terms of what's going to happen. So,
well, and like, I think it's because of this, right? It's because, yeah, I think I said this in the binge, like you get more upset with people that you trust more.
Right.
Right. Like if someone that you have kind of a whatever relationship with lies to you, you're like, eh, it sucks, but like, you know, we weren't that close. When it's the person you really, really trust above everyone else that lies to you, you're going to be more upset about it. So that's not to excuse anything Allison does in this season or even anything Victor does. Like they both make mistakes, but it's just, I think that that does sort of explain like why you might have a stronger reaction than you probably would.
Well, and yeah, especially like you said, because of this conversation, it's like, okay, you're going to trust me with this information, but you're not going to trust me with that information.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I can kind of, as much as I will just come out and say, I do not enjoy Allison's storyline most of the time for a lot of reasons, which I'm sure we'll talk about as it develops in the season. But, I can understand it from the breaking trust standpoint. Not saying that I agree with her actions after that or anything like that.
Poor Allison, done so dirty in this season.
Yeah, I know.
It's just sad.
Well, one of the other big things that happens in this episode is our good friend Luther gets kidnapped by the sparrows. I have to say, we did not mention this, this is how the episode starts, but it is one of my, is such a quintessential, I think, Luther scene at the beginning of the episode, because he's like, hey, everybody, I'm going out for a run. I'm such a, it's such a happy day. I'm going to go out. Da-da-da-da. He's running through the park. And then all of a sudden there's all these ravens around and he's like, oh no. Oh no. Oh, this is bad. This is bad. And it turns out, you know, it's FaZe ravens and Sloan has like lifted him off the ground with gravity and Ben is there and like they kidnap him and take him to their academy. But I just thought that opening scene was it was very Luther in terms of. Like, I still got to work out, but also I'm going to run right into danger.
I mean, I guess the Hotel Obsidian does not strike me as the kind of place that would have a gym or like a treadmill. Luther, do you need to? Maybe this is just me. I just assumed for whatever reason that Luther would like not have to work out, right?
Oh,
like,
fair. Yeah.
But then Marcus is working out like in all this. I don't know.
Well, and it could just be like an energy moving thing as opposed to like a muscle building or health building thing. Like sometimes I have to like dance it out to just like get energy out and it ends up being a workout.
Yeah, this is just how they shake it out. Oh my gosh. Yeah, that's good. So Luther continues the thing that everyone else does, which is just loving Ben being around, even though it's a different Ben. They're always like, oh, it's so great to see you.
And Ben's like, why is everybody saying this? Like, this is really annoying to me. And Luther just like does it, Gary. He's like, because you've been dead for 15 years. Like, duh.
Yeah, yeah. oh, poor Ben. Poor Ben, who's just like, man, everyone's comparing me to this other guy and I'm not him.
Well, and I think that like, I think that also like ties into what we see in Ben throughout the entire season is his like insecurity with being inadequate. So it's like, right. I'm not even good enough for myself. Like everybody else loves this other version of me and I'm not even as good as that other me. So yeah. I think it like is very true to this version of Ben that he gets that annoyed.
Yeah. Yeah. So while Ben is not having it, Luther is like very impressed with the sparrows.
He's loving it.
I love what y'all have going on. You work together. You're so united. And he's not even trying. Like, I think this is also part of why the sparrows are clearly trying to get information out of him and trying to, you know, they say like, hey, Marcus is gone and you're number one. So like basically we kidnapped you because y'all took Marcus. And Luther's like, yeah, that doesn't sound like something we would do. Like, we're not that cohesive. We can't just get together. And like, I think I would have known about that if that happened.
Yeah. But then at the same time, they're like, but you can stay here in our very luxurious academy and do like, he's so like starstruck by everything. That's like not the right word, but he's like, you have cashew butter and almond butter and Brazil nut butter. And like, he's so living it up that the sparrows just like take advantage, like just say, okay, like you can live in this cushy place, but we're gonna make sure you can never leave. And at the same time, like you were saying, he's giving up all this information.
Yeah. I'm having a moment. Who is number two? Oh, is Ben's number two?
Ben's number two, FaZe number three, Alfonso's number four, yeah, Christopher is seven, Jamie's five?
Yeah, this doesn't work for me. Yeah, I was trying to match. I think Sloan is five. I think Jamie is.
Oh, that makes sense.
Is Jamie six? That's weird. I was trying to match them up somehow and be like, is there something in common? I would need to do a deeper thought experiment. Wait for a future episode for me to do that analysis. We'll see if I can come up with anything that makes sense. So they explain a little bit about why they have a nice swanky gym. They're like, yeah, we tore out. They say that they tore out the old lounge and put this in. Now, the cafeteria in the old Umbrella Academy house was like in the basement.
Right.
So like, this looks like it's like closer to the upstairs. Like, yeah, it's like, so I don't know what room we're talking about.
Yeah,
maybe it was just a room we didn't see. How do you feel about the fact that they changed the Academy look in general.
I mean, I think they had to do it to let us know that it was completely different. And also the stuff that they put in there let us know that they do work more together, because they have like everyone has their own treadmill and they're all on it together and they do this. And they're much more provided for than the Umbrella Academy was. So that lets me know that they have money coming in. It just draws more contrast between the two. It's very high-rise-y. I don't know, you know, I don't know if that is also foreshadowing into the end place as well, because the end, like at the end of the series, season, it's very high-rise-y, but I mean, it wasn't distracting to me. It just was like, of course it's different because it's a different academy.
Yeah, it's interesting. So in the first episode, we had thought that we saw a little bit of sparks flying between Sloane and Luther.
Oh yeah.
There's some sparks flying.
Yeah. Well, like Sloane gives him a smoothie at the very beginning. It's like, oh, thanks. And then they, you know, Sloane is assigned to, you know, kind of buddy with Luther to get the information out. But through that process, she like ends up telling him, you know, like, you're actually really, really sweet. And you could hear like the show like backs that up with like swelly romantic music and stuff like that. And Luther ends up smiling, and like Luther tells like, yeah, you know, I've actually been to the moon, you know, sometimes.
She's like, that's so cool. He's like, oh, nobody ever thinks that's cool.
Well, like for real? Yeah, like really? What? And that's like what gets Luther to kind of think like, oh, maybe this is, you know, not real. Like maybe I'm being honey trapped. But they do find commonality in their conversation that they both feel trapped. Like this whole academy, regardless of timeline, regardless of structure, regardless of anything, ends up trapping people in one way, shape, or form. And that's their trauma bonding.
I guess. Yeah, it's sort of that they're the two quiet, hot ones. I don't know.
Sure.
They're all attractive. It's whatever. But I don't know. I still haven't decided yet. I'm hoping that this rewatch, when we go through it, makes me decide whether or not I feel like the Sloane Luther relationship was earned. I think the hard part for me is I like them together, but I wish we had some more Luther deciding to not like Allison.
Yeah, it was super fast.
Like, when did that happen? Because as of season two, Luther's going to Allison's house, crying about her husband, like eating out of sadness. Like there's all that. And I don't recall there ever being a scene where Luther's like, you know what? Yeah, I respect you and Ray, and I'm going to move on.
Well, there's a conversation that he has with Ray and like kind of understands, like, I think he accepts it, but at the end of season two, but I don't know what gets him to think that, like, is he just like, ooh, new timeline, new universe, I guess I'll just like move on. Like, there's no,
maybe it's just love at first sight, and when it's right, it's right. And he's like, oh, you know what is slightly less creepy than crushing on my sibling, crushing on someone who's not technically my sibling.
Who's, you know, like a more of a cousin than a sibling. Yeah,
like a sibling removed, because in a different time, whatever. But they're, you know, they're sweet. They both seem to get along and everything. Luther does start, it has something to do with there's cameras. And I think Sloane is trying to be like, there's cameras watching us. I can't really talk. But also Faye walks in and kind of is intimidating. So Luther's like, oh my gosh, you're honey trapping me. Which, like, yes, that's exactly obviously what I think Sloane is supposed to be doing. Yes. Like, I think that's like what Sloane's supposed to be doing, but Sloane is also kind of falling for her preppy. All of the scenes with the sparrows and Luther crack me up also, because they're this perfect mix of like the sparrows being kind of rude to Luther while also being hospitable. And I think the hospitable part comes from like they're famous and maybe they have like people visit their house. And like they'll give him a tour and give him a smoothie or whatever. And it's like that's like part of the, like, I'm doing these things, I can't stop doing the thing, but also you suck, Luther. Like, you know,
like part but of I'm their gonna training.
Be nice about it. Yeah.
Yeah.
You suck, Luther. Now here's a tote bag. Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think the whole, first of all, putting Luther with the sparrows, I think was a smart choice from the writers, just because it's so like Luther's just such a, like, for lack of a better term, a himbo in that world and isn't going to pick up on stuff so quickly as maybe other people. But I don't really know who in the Umbrella Academy would. Five, I guess. But I enjoyed it. I enjoyed the whole time he was there, because he kind of, this was his like Thor moment of coming out of his
yeah.
depression.
Somewhere in the middle of season two, they decided that all the characters were going to be a little bit more, I don't know, like this, right? Like it seems like if you go back and look at and think about season one, Luther was very much like, I got to figure out, you know, we got to solve the problem. We got to figure out how dad died. We got to do this. We got to do this. Whereas now Luther's like just smiley and like, oh yeah, this is cool. Like getting kidnapped by the sparrows. Cool. Like I feel like he's not trying to like fight them. He's not trying to, you know, I guess that was sort of delegated more to like the Diego spot of being like, let's take him down. Like, I don't know.
Do we think this could be a product of healing?
maybe. I don't know. I or more love, or maybe it's just Luther being like, you know what? We've time traveled a couple times now. Like, I don't really care. I don't really.
Yeah.
I'm not gonna try too hard.
Or like,
this isn't the real world. It's fine.
Being with the siblings for more than a day at a time.
Yeah.
You know, something like that. Yeah, so that's what Luther's up to mostly in this episode. We also get Allison and Victor are, you know, pairing up to go. Allison decides to accompany Victor to go meet with Marcus to get the briefcase. And this whole time, this is where we start to see Allison's depression sort of come out, mainly because she blames herself after returning from learning that Claire does not exist on this timeline. Allison is blaming herself. She's like, I knew the risks with time jumping. I shouldn't have done it. And Victor is there for her and, you know, consoles her. And this is where they decide, you know, to team up and go meet with Marcus. Yeah, I think there's some things here about time travel that we can kind of talk about, because I think it's interesting. And I like how Allison takes into account the fact that she time jumped, but other people have time jumped and it hasn't had that much of an effect, specifically Klaus.
Yeah, I don't think it was the jumping back to 2019 that was the problem. I think the problem was you changed too much in the past while you were there.
Yeah.
I think that was more of the issue. Like, their plan at this point is we're going to meet up with Marcus and get the briefcase back and jump back into the past, I think, to like write everything. Because I think Allison realizes either I just need to go back in the past and be with Ray, or I need to try and go just, you know, slightly in the past, maybe back to the mid-80s to before we were born. I don't know how that helps, because then you're still.
Yeah, I think for both Victor and Allison, they're looking at the 60s, because Victor wants to go be with Sissy.
Yeah.
And Allison wants to go back with Ray.
Yeah, it's, I don't know how logically you fix what's happened here, because I would have thought that what you, like, at the end of season two, when they jump to 2019 and they go a day after the supposed apocalypse, I don't know how that would have ever worked, right? Like, what did you think that you changed in 1963 that was going to fix whatever Vanya did in blowing up the moon? Wouldn't you have wanted to just jump back into the future? I guess you have to jump after the past, though, because otherwise there's two of you, right? Like, if they jump back to where they were all hanging out at the beginning of season one, now there's two versions of themselves, theoretically.
Right.
Like, I feel like somehow time travel, you need to jump back into your other body. I don't know how that works. Whatever kind of time travel that is, that's what needed to happen. But yeah, I mentioned here, like, it's interesting how Klaus went to Vietnam for 10 months and didn't mess with like that. Nothing about the timeline changed, except for, I would say, Klaus changed.
Yes.
But besides that, nothing else happened. But that's because they jumped. Well, that's also because they jumped using the briefcase. So they jumped using the briefcase and then jumped back. So that it wasn't like there was another version of themselves existing when they were gone.
Right.
And I guess when they left and when they came back was only a matter of maybe minutes or something. to the rest of the world.
Right. Right. Yeah. I think they mentioned that specifically is like, it may have been 10 minutes to you, but it was, you know,
10 months to me or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't know. It's interesting. But yeah, Allison's going to have some flashbacks to her time in Dallas while she's at a restaurant.
And I couldn't tell if that was like time jumpy sickness or just like trauma reminders or what, because it's very vivid. Like she's having a conversation with Victor in a cafe. She sees a mom with her daughter, and then she has all these flashbacks to Claire and all of that. So I can't tell what it is, but it's definitely it like knocks her off of herself. Like she's not centered in any way while she's having these flashbacks.
Yeah, I think it's to show, I mean, the thing with the mom and the daughter is to show like I clearly am
missing Claire,
struggling with Claire, yep, the Claire issue. And then I think the which maybe she didn't have as much of in the 1960s because she was just so sure she was going to be able to get back to it eventually.
Well, and that's my question is like, how was she sure that Claire was alive in that version?
Yeah, no, it does not make any sense. That part never made sense to me. And then the second part is the visions of the person, the waiter, like pouring the coffee.
Right.
I think this is also her realizing that her time in the 1960s changed her and possibly in ways that other people did not have the same type. I mean, although I do think Victor clearly has – their time with Sissy has affected them much more than like, you know, Luther's time doing whatever Luther was doing.
Yeah, I think I couldn't – when I first watched it on first watch, I was like, does this mean her doppelganger is around somewhere because she's having like these flashbacks? But the only person from her past that we see is Harlan. So Allison goes out into the street to catch some fresh air because she's freaking out with these flashbacks. And she sees who we know, not now, not in this episode, but we know from watching the season as a whole. We see the man with his headphones on that we saw on the bus in the previous episode, who is Harlan. And Allison tries to chase Harlan, but he gets away. So that's kind of what Allison and Victor are up to most of this episode.
Yeah, Harlan gets away. And at the time, it almost seemed like Harlan like did like five and spatial jumped, like time or not time travel, but teleported. But, like,
yeah.
Still unclear what Harlan's abilities exactly are, but.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, yeah. Maybe we'll find out as we continue, like as I rewatch stuff, maybe I'll find out. I just know that it's like a different color than Victor.
It seems to be kind of similar or possibly like the reverse of Victor. It's some sort of sound-based situation.
Something. Yeah.
Yeah.
But we also get a brief little glimpse at Lila here in this episode. Lila, you know, after dropping Stan off in episode one, is like trying to get out of town. So she has a briefcase with her. But when she opens the briefcase, it goes plop, plop, plop. It's like it's completely – it's like the car won't start in this situation.
Yeah. Stutters.
And, she is not happy about it. She bangs it up against a bench and everything. And at the time, on the first watch, I was like, okay, that's weird. Like, what would cause that to happen? But now that we've watched the entire season, we know that the commission, like, ceased to exist at this point. So no wonder why briefcases aren't working. But this does not deter Lila because she doesn't know that at this point either. she knows that there is another briefcase in the academy. So she finds her way over and she ends up using slow and phase powers to kind of get the briefcase out of the basement of the academy. And so at the end of this episode, we just know that she has it, but we don't necessarily see her use it in any way yet.
Yeah, originally with Lila, I thought that they needed to like see someone use their ability and then use it, but it actually seems like just being near someone.
Yeah, it's enough. Like a really wide radius because the first time she uses Sloane's powers, like Sloane is up kind of like by the cafeteria in that high rise area, and Lila's like down on the ground, and that's like many stories of difference in distance.
But that was very similar to the first time they used Victor's power because they were like across the field. So
yeah, like it's a big radius no matter what.
Yeah,
she can grab powers from far distances.
And this is something that I was thinking about a lot in the binge of, if Lila had not come to this time period with Stan to mess with Diego, would Lila have just also ceased to exist, collapsed in their own timeline that they were chilling in? Or would they have been able to live that one out until 2019 or something? But the fact that the commission ceased to exist and the commission is sort of outside timelines makes me think that everything in every timeline has exploded. Well, I guess because the way that the commission works is that there is one timeline, but the commission is just able to travel throughout it.
Yes.
It's and very, so Lila is just at one point in the timeline. So I don't really know. Maybe they would get to go up to 2019.
The,
I don't know.
The commission reminds me of the TVA from Loki. If you've watched Loki, if there's any Loki people out there, that's how that works. It's kind of like, we got to protect the one timeline. And yeah, I think you're right. If there is no commission, then it's kind of hard to protect.
But the commission, well, we saw the commission before. It seemed to be like in the 50s was when like the handler was going to it.
Yeah, and we learn in this season that it was founded by Five. So I don't – maybe we'll find out. Maybe there's another –
I need someone to break down to me exactly how the commission works because
break out your film strips.
The only way that I was able to make sense of it was by pretending that it existed like in a parallel timeline, not in the main one, but that wouldn't make sense that it would be gone now. Oh, that's so confusing. So that's another thing that I'm going to do some research on before a later episode. So hopefully in a few episodes, I'll have more.
We'll have more commission talk for sure. For sure. Then another, this is my favorite part of the episode, which is the Klaus and Five road trip. So at the start of Klaus, we first see Klaus in this episode. He's like waking up. He talks about how he couldn't sleep because he was sharing a bed with Luther, and Luther was farting all the time. Very brother, brother engagement there. But he wakes up and he like opens his shoe and he finds like a piece of paper that has like his mom's information on it. So throughout the entire morning, he like doesn't say anything, but then he pulls Five aside and he's like, "Hey, yo, do you want to like go to Pennsylvania on a road trip?" And Five just eats it up because Five wants to, you know, live the retirement life and get out of town and kind of see the sights. And this is where the title of the episode, World's Biggest Ball of Twine, comes into play, because on their little road trip to Pennsylvania, Five like turns the car very, very violently to go see. He's like, "This is one of the best ones. This is one of the best balls of twine." I enjoyed that entire sequence.
Yeah, mildly unhinged Five is just kind of the best. No, we have to see it. And I think there's like a lot of shouting, and I think Klaus shouts like, "We're gonna die," and Klaus is like, "Error," and Five's like, "It'll be worth it." It'll be fine. Oh gosh.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. Through their time together, Klaus finally, you know, tells Five what's going on. It's like, "We're on a mission to find my birth mother. I just needed emotional support." And the way he like, we find out what that little slip of paper is because apparently in the early aughts, and we know it's the early aughts because Amy Winehouse was at the top of the charts, we find, you know, Klaus goes into Reggie's office and found like check stubs from, you know, from Reggie's past, and one of the ones that she found was from his mom. And I love that Klaus was upset that it was only for $3,000. Like, why not five? Why not six? I'm worth so much more. And Five is like, "Okay, well, but why now? Like, why do you want to go on this road trip now?" And Klaus says, "To find out who I could have been if I didn't grow up in this family." And I feel like this is a very like trauma recovery type thing. When, at least for me, I can speak, when there's a traumatic event, you know, from my past, I always think like, who could I have been if that thing did not happen? And Klaus is taking this opportunity to, you know, to find out for himself along the way.
All right, here's my time travel issue with this one.
Tell me.
So Klaus wore these boots the whole time in the
60s. Whole time.
I'm pretty sure that's not factually correct.
No, because he was barefoot leading his cult.
And I mean, I know he had a house and maybe he had left them there and then took them before they left. But I don't, was he wearing boots when he landed?
I don't know. Maybe they were left at the hotel? Question mark.
Okay. I could believe that, although how they would be left, unless the hotel just exists throughout all timelines, which I guess is possible, because, I mean, you know,
it's that Klaus, the hotel.
Yeah. That's possible. All right, let's just put that in the category of don't think too hard about it. yeah. So, Amish country.
Yeah. I do want to just point out the one scene of when they do see the ball of twine. There's a funny little banter of like,
oh, yeah.
Like, you're a good brother. And it's like, now this is when you say nice things about me. And Five goes, let's go find your stupid mother. And he goes, Klaus returns. Love you too, Tiny Dancer. It was just one of my favorite parts of the entire episode.
Yeah, the Klaus and Five dynamic is so good. I love that. Yeah. Like, I guess Five is like, oh, whatever. Like, what am I going to tell him that no, we can't go find your mom? Like, okay, I guess. kind of interesting that Five's not like, hey, do you have my parents' info or anything? But yeah, so they go to Amish country, mm-hmm. Where Klaus starts speaking with a woman, Sarah Beth. And Sarah Beth seems like kind of interested in Klaus, a little bit scared, but kind of interested, maybe has some information. But a man comes out and is like, go away, get out of here, we hate you. And I think Klaus even says something like, wait, I thought you were supposed to be nice. And the man is like, that's a misconception.
I thought it reminded me of an episode of Schitt's Creek. If you've watched Schitt's Creek when David is with the Amish. Yes. Yeah. I thought it was, you know, an interesting, I thought it was interesting that Klaus's mom was Amish. I thought that was fun. Before he goes in to go talk to find Sarah Beth, Five does a double check. And only am bringing this up because this is something that I noticed as a rewatch, having watched the entire season thus far. This, I think, is to kind of like, now I know, is like the reason why the double check was okay, because Five is like, hey, Klaus, do you feel weird? Do you have any of these signs of psychosis? And he's like, no, I feel fine. It's because there are no doppels, because their moms are dead. Like, the characters don't know this at this point, but right. It on a rewatch, it's kind of like a little tell. But yeah, Sarah Beth tells Klaus, like, hey, Rachel, my sister has been dead for over 30 years. She died on October 1st, 1989. What a popular date, of a brain hemorrhage. Like,
yeah, and not only that, but it wasn't like died in childbirth. It was like died before the time that Klaus would have been born.
Right.
So that doesn't make any sense.
Right. And because of his interactions that you just mentioned, Klaus gets chased by the Amish, gets chased away. And as he's running through the fields, we see, you know, cows disappear. And at the same time, there's a little sliver of a scene where Grace is like worshiping the orb in the basement, but we see this is like another expansion of what I put in my notes as baby Kugel. The baby Kugel has expanded and takes all these cows. And this is where Five sees it and is like, okay, something. Can't I just get like, a day off? What is going on?
There were definitely just a bunch of cows there and now they're just gone.
Yes. What happened? Before they leave the farm, Sarah Beth gives Klaus a book, and this is where he learns that, you know, Rachel, his mom, was not the only one who died on this day, and that Rachel died before Klaus was even born. And this like causes Five to like stop the car. He's like, okay, now time shenanigans are in play.
Yeah, like this is a problem, because I thought that we were just back in the timeline with two of us and everything would have been fine. We just have to worry about not seeing ourselves and then it's fine. I can retire, but no. One thing I did want to point out was, you know, based on the two seasons we've seen so far, it would be totally understandable to think that Klaus might have said or done some things that would have been making the Amish people mad. I think Klaus was being very nice. He was perfectly fine in these scenes. It's like, poor Klaus. He's on his best behavior and he's still getting run out of town.
He's just, you know, asking, what did the man say? He's like, you're making the woman folk upset. So therefore... You're making me upset, so you must leave now.
Yeah, doesn't Klaus say something like, no, the women folk love me? I don't know.
He's like, the women folk love me. I mean, he's not lying. So
certainly this woman folk like him.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, no, I thought that like it was a really fun whole interaction for us to get this information.
When Klaus is like, oh, I'm Amish, that makes total sense. Like, yeah. does it make total? I mean, okay, I don't know.
I mean, of all the choices they could have made, I mean, I think anything off the wall makes sense for Klaus. Anything that makes sense does not make sense for him. You know what
yeah,
I mean?
Yeah, I think it was kind of like, oh, maybe this is why I rebel so much. I don't know. It's just interesting.
Well, spiritual. Interesting. He's spiritual.
He is. He's the spiritual one. Yeah.
Before we talk about the rest of the episode, let's take a quick break and we will be right back.
On May 10th, Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes is coming to IMAX and theaters everywhere.
What a wonderful day!
This summer, one movie event will reign.
It is our time.
Apes hunt humans.
That is wrong.
For your king.
Never.
Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Only in theaters May 10. Tickets on sale now. Rated PG-13. Some material may be inappropriate for children under 13.
All right. We are back. And we are back to talk about, I think, one of the most fun parts of the episode. And that is everything that went on with Diego and Stan and Alfonso and Jamie in the convenience store. This is like one of my favorite fights out of the entire series, I think. But Diego and Stan are at the convenience store because like, we learned that Stan has like some ear condition where he needs ear medicine. It's really gross. I was like, why do we need this? And this question is unanswered throughout the entire series. We still don't know what's up with his ear.
Yeah. He's got some sort of ear condition that requires some kind of medicine. And I think what I love about this whole back-to-back couple of scenes with Diego and Stan is that Diego instantly strikes this balance of like, kid, don't bother me, I'm doing important things, and also like weirdly being kind of protective of Stan. And I mean, I guess it's not weird if you're told like it's your son, but yeah, he's like, he talks to Stan like Stan is one of his siblings or something, like an equal, but mm-hmm. also tells Stan what to do, and Stan like kind of listens. Like that, I think that was where I thought I was going to hate this dynamic, was I thought I was going to really get annoyed because I thought it would be Diego would be like, Stan, go apologize to the hotel person, and that Stan would be like, I don't want to, I'm a little brat. Like that's what I was expecting, and instead mm-hmm. it's like, Stan, go clean up your mess. And Stan's like, oh, okay, fine, Dad. And I don't know why. And with the understanding that we get at the end of the season, which is that Stan is not even Diego's actual son, it's like, wait, why was Stan listening to Diego? Does he just like respect authority?
We learn when we see Lila in Berlin that like Stan doesn't have a father figure and his mom is hardly ever around. So I think he's just looking for like attention and guidance in whatever. And some like kids love structure. So it's like, hey, this is a thing to do, you know?
Yeah. I think Lila was just like, pretend he's your dad. And Stan was like, cool. I've never had a dad. Like,
I can do that.
Yeah.
And I time traveled like this lady, you know what I mean? Like, it's so cool for a kid, I think. So while they're in the convenience store, Jamie and Alfonso from the Sparrows walk in, and they are just like, I couldn't tell if they were stealing, but they're like trying all of the stuff in the store. Like, I think Jamie's totally stealing. Alfonso was really into the perfume. I don't know what's going on with that.
Yeah, I'm like, Jamie is like, she kind of, I don't know, gives a dirty look to like the store owner who's like, hey, you can't just like eat the food. And she also looks like she's kind of just like stuffing it into her pockets.
Yeah.
Unclear. I'm like, aren't you like super famous and wealthy? Right? Like, can you not pay for this? Or like, wouldn't the store be like, oh my gosh, it's Jamie and Alfonso. Like, have whatever you want. Like, one or the other.
A thing that wasn't clear to me is like, if they were there because they tracked Diego and Stan there, or if they were there just like on their own accord.
I think it was just a coincidence. I think they were just thrown in. Because Alfonso was like, get me some snacks while I go do whatever I'm doing with the perfume over here.
Yeah, so Diego sees them and goes into like 100% Diego assassin stealthy mode and is like, okay, Stan, stay over here. I got to go do this. And a fight scene breaks out to Quando, 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 which was very, very entertaining.
It was such a good scene.
Yeah. You know, we get typical Diego knife stuff, but we also see that like Stan like wants to be a part of it, but also keeps his distance for a while. Like he's like, don't worry, Dad, I got your back. I got her back. And he throws a knife and, you know, he ends up getting hurt because of Alfonso's power. The knife, like, he gets cut in the leg because the knife hits Alfonso's leg. And this causes like total dad mode in Diego, and also very true to Diego, because he goes over to Stan. He's like, it's not that bad.
Like, stop crying.
Stop crying. And in the course of the fight, we also learn that Alfonso has asthma for some reason. Like, yeah, I
guess that's like his weakness, is that like, so I think from what we can tell is that he does also experience the pain of the things inflicted. It's just that they also go back on the other person or something, or he clearly experiences some pain. It's like there's like a D&D spell that's I can't think of what it is, but it's something like that. Or it's like you only take like half the pain inflicted, but you like
he has
also
temporary hit points a little bit. Yeah,
yeah. He's got to, yeah, something like that. But yeah, so I guess he seems to be kind of taken out at the end, just because he's like has an asthma attack. Like that's what it looks like.
Yeah, and this causes Diego to say something very un-Diego like, and says, "He who fights who fights and walks away learns to fight another day," to Stan, which I thought was like, I was like, ooh, growth, Diego, growth, because like other Diego would want to finish the job.
Yeah, I think Diego also learned like, I can't take this guy, so yeah, let's go. And also I've got this like, you know, person over here that I need to make sure doesn't die while I'm trying to fight. But yeah, I'm going to go back and watch the scene again, because it's just so enjoyable to me. It's so funny. And something about this version of Diego, I just really love. I don't really exactly know how to quantify it, but it's this perfect balance of being your classic Diego while also trying to take on, like, it seems a lot like a person who's like instantly become a parent, but didn't know they were. So they're very much themselves, but they're also trying to like really hard to be a good parent. And I think he says at some point in the season, like, I had a bad example of a father and I don't want to be that way to my child. So, but also like smacks the kid upside the head and is like, now take your ear medication or whatever.
Yeah. Or like, it's not that bad.
Stop crying.
Which is like, I think something that he would say to himself, I think, mm-hmm. at the same time. Yeah. Any other like Diego Stan moments from this episode that stand out to you?
I don't know. I mean, I think that he has the conversation about his father, and it's like, even the whole reason that they're going to get this ear medication. Oh, when they first get to the store and he's like, just buy the generic stuff or whatever. And Stan is like, no, I need my brand. And he's like, well, it's your ear is leaking. I'm sure it's fine with like whatever ingredients. And he's like, no, I need my brand. Like I'm the one who has to deal with this. You know, the only reason my ear stops leaking is because of the brand. I just love that. I love that. I was kind of upset though. I was like, did they buy it? Because he said, go buy it and then I'll come back, or hold on to it.
I think like it is referenced later in the season, like, hey, don't forget your ear medicine type of thing. So I think they become stole in possession of it. Yeah. I don't know how that happens, but
had it when they walked out. You know what? Yeah. Jamie walked out with a bunch of free food, so it makes sense.
That's true. Yeah. Well, everyone comes back from their adventures from the day, except for Luther. They meet back up at the hotel, and Diego is mad at Lila for dumping Stan because he's cramping my style. He's like, scrambling my style. I need to be able to react at a moment's notice. And how can I do that if I got this kid? And he keeps referring to himself as like an alleged dad. He's an alleged dad.
Allegedly.
Which again is very true. Telling. Yeah. For the audience. Like, we think it's funny on first watch, but like watching it now that we've watched the entire season, we're like, yeah, no, that's right. That's right. And this, all of this talk gets Allison like even more depressed. She's like drinking and it's like, at least you have a kid. So she's still in the Claire's not here headspace. And I think it like remains there for the rest of the entire season. Like there's no getting out of it.
We really start getting a lot of the Allison sort of snarkily sitting in the corner. I don't even know if you can call it snarky because it's like, she's very upset and it's producing itself in this kind of ugly tone that she has. And she's drinking, she's smoking in almost every scene. And I got to say, this is like a sentiment that seems to be pretty widespread on Twitter. So everyone is like, what happened to Allison? Why is Allison so unbearable? And we'll get to it. But there's even worse things that Allison does in this season that are like going to be really hard to come back from character wise.
If there's a season 4, I hope it's an Allison redemption story and we really get something back, because watching these seasons so close to each other, it was such a stark contrast in the character that it was very distracting the whole time. I mean, if you're just watching season 3 after not watching season 2, let us know if you're having a different experience, because it's really, really obvious the differences here, and they're not enjoyable.
And I almost feel like if it went season 1, season 3, this would almost make more sense, because the tail end of season 1, there was a lot of crying about not being able to talk to Claire because she had lost her voice, about, you know, being taking her frustration on her divorce out on Vanya and other siblings. And then in season 2, it was like we had exactly one mention of Claire in the entire season. And it seemed like Allison had kind of forgot, and it's only now that we're back here in 2019 that Allison remembers it. So I don't know. Yeah,
there's a little, and it's like, not only is there a difference in her character, but as you just explained, there's a lot of holes in her plot too. So it's like, it's distracting on many levels from my perspective.
I agree.
Also during this time, Klaus is showing everybody the book that Sarah Beth gave her. And I thought it was so cute because they're showing all the pictures and Klaus like specifically points at Rachel. It's like, that one's mine. Like, he's so proud.
Can you tell? I have their eyes. Yeah,
it's like so cute. It was just, you know, but this is where they start thinking, like, if we weren't born in this timeline, how can we exist? Like, they're noticing that stuff is happening. They're seeing that there were news stories about their moms, but instead of giving birth on this day, it was because they all died on the same day. And this is where 5 like puts together that when they jumped, they created a paradox known as the grandfather paradox. This is all we learn in this episode. We know later on, and we'll talk about it in the next episode because it's a big part of the episode.
Oh yeah.
But this is our first mention of the grandfather paradox.
Yeah, we're definitely going to talk a lot about it next episode, but just in this one, you can tell that, okay, we've entered into a situation that's unusual, was not what we had intended, and it's having dire consequences throughout this timeline. For example, in this timeline, there's some sort of weird event that happened where a bunch of women died of brain hemorrhages all of a sudden. And it's not just their 7 or their 6 mothers in this case. It's also several others that we'll find out later. So this is sort of a widespread news story of something that happened. Although I don't know if it would have been a news story if around the world – I mean, 20-something, I can't remember what it was, like 27 or something. It's such a small number. But even if it is like a thing
in this timeline, also, it's like, what I didn't understand about this was like, there are also a lot of spontaneous births in this timeline as well. Like, not like as many, but they were still happening. Would be
if the spontaneous births were a news story on this day, and they're like, oh my gosh, also on this day, randomly, all these women just like die. Yeah, that, you know, maybe that would sort of make more sense.
I would just wish we could have seen that in the book of like, you know, something to help draw that conclusion. And we don't have to do all the work as the audience, people. That's what
I know. But I guess the show was like, if they want to take the time to do this, then they can do it. Otherwise, just sit back and enjoy. But this is another scene that I want to go back and rewatch and freeze frame and see and just like detailed look at all the pictures in the book of the women and stuff. That's the kind of thing I find fun.
Yeah. I mean, let us know if you find anything fun and exciting in there. And then the episode kind of wraps up with Luther being released. Like, he gets called in by the Sparrows and they're like, hey, we've decided to let you go. And on your way out, like, don't forget your tote bag. But if you hurt Marcus, we're going to kill you. Like, basically, like, it's a very like PR stunt type of thing that's happening. Faye is definitely like, if you do anything, my ravens are coming to make a nest in your brain type of thing. And Luther's like, yeah, I got it. Yeah.
I really wanted to see what was in the tote bag.
Me too.
I was like, I assume it's like a water bottle and like a poster, maybe a t-shirt. Swag bag. I did think that this is something that I do all the time when watching these type of shows. I'm like, the tote bag has a hidden microchip. It's going to be tracking him. It has a bomb. It's got a microphone. And then the tote bag ends up having no purpose, serving no purpose. I think it was just a funny joke of being like, they're threatening you, but also giving you a gift on the way out.
Well, and it's something like Luther references, I think, in the next episode. Like, he loves it. He like loves the tote bag. Who doesn't? I mean, I have to say I have too many tote bags now because I love tote bags so much.
I've lost my favorite one in the move and I don't know what happened to it.
Oh, you'll find it. You'll find it.
No, I hope so.
So Luther like leaves with the understanding that, you know, Marcus is important and not to hurt him and to bring him back if he can. But he walks out and then like Sloane just kind of like picks him up. And this to me was like, fun, but also like, are you kidnapping him? Like, are you, this is like without consent, or like, what would you do if you're just like walking down the street and then whoop, you're like lifted off the ground? I mean, I guess if I knew that someone I know could do that, I wouldn't be like as creeped out, but I just was like, this is a little weird.
Especially since Luther, just the last conversation they had with Sloane was like, you're honey trapping me.
Right.
And now.
Yeah, and so like Luther's like picked up from the ground all the way through. We do see like a little scene of Reggie watching TJ Hooker, and he's like, "Go get him, TJ." It's very like, so we'll
get Reggie. More on Reggie. Reggie.
And Sloane like brings Luther into her room and is like, "Look, I just want to apologize for everything I said earlier. I really do care about the moon." but there were people watching us, and Luther's like, are people watching us now? And I'm like, you're gonna do this. I know this is happening. This is what's gonna happen. And he goes in for the kiss, and then Sloane makes them float, and we end this episode with them kissing to the a very fun cover of Higher Love. I liked it. It was very like serene and mellow. It was fun.
And we're gonna find out at the beginning of the next episode that looks like they did a little more than kiss.
Yeah, a little bit.
But then, you know,
again, that question of like super fast. Like, I don't know. I'll accept it as the audience, but it's very fast.
It's not the speed in which they fall in love. It's the complete erasure of the previous love interest Luther's had the last two seasons for me.
Yeah.
That's doing
well,
it.
Well, yeah. No, I think that's, to me, the when I'm talking about the speed, it's like processing past. It's right. Just like, I guess I'm in love with her. I guess. I don't know. Like, what? And it sticks throughout the season. Like, that's what I was really surprised with the season as a whole, is that he wasn't. Like, it was genuine. It was a genuine relationship between the two of them. Yeah. So that is episode 2 of season 3 of The Umbrella Academy. Mary, any particular reflections on the series as a whole, or anything that we did not mention that you want to make sure we get in?
Sure. I think it was something I was just thinking about when we were talking about Luther, was it's interesting which characters they decide for this season get to have a fun season and not think about their past drama and which ones don't have that luxury. Like Allison, obviously they go full in thinking about the consequences of her actions and time travel and her past and the loves she's lost, etc. Victor, I think, has a happy medium of mentioning the loss of Sissy, clearly actively trying to get back, but also not letting that completely affect everything that's happening with their current plotline. And then you have characters like Klaus, who I think maybe, correct me if I hallucinated this, I think at one point in this season, there's a scene of Klaus like looking at their dog tags of Dave, even though I was pretty sure that they gave the dog tags to Dave back in season two.
Yeah, they did.
Yeah, they did. But I'm pretty sure that happened. But then other than that, and I think maybe one mention of like, yeah, we all lost people or whatever, Klaus gets to have like just sort of a fun, lighthearted season, you know? So I think it's interesting which people they sort of pick and choose that. And maybe it's because we already had two seasons of Klaus kind of being like really, I don't know, upset over the Dave situation. I don't know. Yeah. Like, yeah, it's kind of played out. Let's do something different.
I love that you brought that up because it got me thinking, like, is there a way we can look at these characters on the spectrum of healing from trauma? Is there a way that we can look at them in the lens of, you know, the stages of grief? Like, maybe there's something to this in terms of what the show is trying to tell us, or it was just a decision by the writers. Like, I think I'll keep that in mind as I continue to rewatch these episodes, because, you know, it could be said that like Luther is forgetting his past, but it also, his past does come up towards the end of the season, but it could also be seen as like denial of just like forgetting and denial can be close cousins, you know? Like, I don't know. That's why I want to see if we can see any other trends with any of the other characters and how they are. But I also feel like Diego is very, you know, true to himself, like a healed, more healed version of himself. Klaus is a little bit more healed, and accepting of who he is and accepting of his full power. Like, he's not afraid to be himself in this season. So it's an interesting thing to think about.
Yeah. Yeah. It's something that I wonder if was a choice by the, like, I wonder how much input the actors had. And then I can already hear people being like, Mary, they don't have any, this is not, it's not about, they don't get to write their characters. But, you know, I think they have some. Yeah. So I don't know.
Especially when we're getting to content outside of the comics. I think there could be more influence by the actors there. I don't know, obviously, but it wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah. I don't know. Anyway, well, we'll keep tracking it, but at the very least, I'm enjoying the people who have got to have some healing.
So. Yes.
That's been
agreed.
Fun.
I would say the other thing from this episode is A+ music choices. I would put these on playlists. There are some where I'm like, not so much, but this one, for sure.
Yes. Love it.
Well, I think that about wraps it up. Like I said, you can find us in many of feeds. So I hope you continue to join us for the rest of our coverage. Recaps will be coming twice a week till the end of July. And then if you have any feedback, we would really love to hear from you. We really want this to be, you know, your show too. So if you could reach out to us or want to reach out to us, we can both be found in the Post Show Recaps Discord, which you can gain access to by becoming a patron of Post Show Recaps, which is super easy. Just go to patreon.com/postshowrecaps. You can join us at any level and get access to the Discord and join in our conversation there. You can reach out to us directly on Twitter, or you can email us at super@postshowrecaps. We want to hear from you. Like, it's not, I love talking about the show with Mary, but I also love hearing But I'm just saying, like, wouldn't it be fun to have like other, like, no, we are so in this.
I'm not going to take that as a slight. Mary's fine, but please let me talk to someone else.
Mary, I think like we are living the parallel timelines in terms of watching the show and all of this stuff. I just, someone outside of the UA bubble, what are their thoughts?
Yes.
So we'd love to hear from you. I love podcasting with you, Mary. So outside of that, Mary, where can people find you?
You can find me everywhere on social media at Frail Mary, and you can find me podcasting about various different things over on my podcasting site, KowskiCast. That's Cow with a K. What about you? Right.
Yeah, I'm basically living it up here in the Academy. I've got some other poster recap shows coming up, but like I said, the Discord's a good place to find me, or on Twitter at MarsBars, MarzBars. And that'll do it. Until next time.